I only have a couple fragments of verses on my heart and sort of one thought, and I think I'll maybe try to share a little bit about that too. Maybe just start a conversation and see where that goes. Someone can take it a different direction. The kind of thing that's a little bit on my mind and heart has to do with two things at once, I guess. It has to do with suffering and the goodness of God. And like suffering sounds like a real heavy topic, you know, but I honestly kind of feel like what it's connected to in my heart has more to do with the goodness of God. But suffering is like, I don't know if you ever, like, I remember when I was in college and I was taking Bible classes and kind of interacting a little bit with like the world of people's ideas about Christianity, but like suffering is like one of the great problems of philosophy and theology and religion. Like they have this thing called the problem of evil or the problem of suffering, and it's like this massive like thing that people wrestle with and write giant books about because they're trying to like handle this tension of like, how can a God of infinite goodness be like permit the kind of like suffering and evil to exist in the world? And like the evil that is in this world is tremendous for sure. And the suffering of this world is great as well. And just don't get your hopes up. I have nothing even close to a tidy answer for this, like, you know, centuries old problem. But I just kind of mentioned that because, like, it's, I don't know, I can't, I've given up kind of trying to use my brain to get simple solutions to things like that. And more, I hope I've begun to learn to just let the Father kind of teach me things from my heart as I slowly begin to walk with him. And that's kind of like what this sort of falls into. But I think about suffering sometimes. I think about the suffering of the people around me. I think about the small measure of suffering I've experienced. I think about the nature of what it means to walk with God. What is God doing with our hearts and our lives in time? And yeah, I've just a few, the last couple of weeks, some of these thoughts have been swirling around my head about just God and his incredible goodness, and a goodness that kind of like makes use of pain and suffering and can turn evil even into a greater goodness. And I want to be careful, like what I mean by that. I think it's absolutely clear and right to say and believe and assert that God himself is never the author of evil, never wills evil, never wills suffering, never wills sin. Bible's super clear about that. That's not what I mean, but I've been kind of marveling a little bit at times inwardly about how the eternal, omnipotent, all-powerful, all-good Father can kind of in some ways like increase his goodness and increase joy and increase like eternal delight through suffering. And like, for instance, this verse that where Paul says, "For light and momentary afflictions are producing for us an eternal weight of glory." I love that verse. And we got to remember that, like, most people would not describe Paul's sufferings as light and momentary. You know, he wasn't the guy who just like occasionally, you know, I don't know, sprained his ankle or something. He had some deep and difficult, he described being in like deep distress, like being, what's that? There's that passage in Corinthians where he talks about like That's an incredibly strong language, the inward and outward trials he had experienced, including being shipwrecked a couple times, spending a night and day in the deep, being forsaken by like all his friends and brothers, like inwardly feeling completely devastated. But he's able to say, like, I think in a measure of truth and perspective, to say these light and momentary afflictions produce an eternal weight of glory. Or this is another one of the little verses I keep thinking about, is I love that story in the Gospels where Jesus, I believe, is in the house of a Pharisee, and the woman who is a prostitute comes and begins to like weep and use her hair and kiss his feet. And I think it's like Simon the Pharisee, or I forget what his name is, kind of is like offended. And Jesus like takes this moment to ask him this question and try to like teach him something, and says like, hey, like imagine a man, I got a question for you. Imagine somebody has like two debtors, and like one owes $50 and one owes $500,000, and he forgives them both. Which one's gonna love him more? And he says, well, I suppose the one whom he forgave more. And he says, you've answered right. And then he says this thing like, she has been forgiven much and she loves much. And that I feel like feels a little bit like in the same vein, sort of what Paul was describing, or what I'm just trying to get at. It's a very simple thing, but like what that woman experienced, like I just think about that woman in eternity. Like she was forgiven much, and she also like probably suffered much too. She was clearly a sinner. And you know, my wife were just and I were just sort of, because of random reasons, like discussing that woman the other day and talking about how like it's like a safe assumption that we sometimes think about like the prostitutes in the Bible, like on a little bit of a detour. We think about the prostitutes in the Bible as just like, oh, these horrific women who like chose to earn their living by prostitution, you know? And like I think it's safe to say that like the vast majority of prostitutes in the history of the world were probably not, that probably like wasn't fully their choice. Do you know what I mean? Like we have different terms for it now, but like most of the people in these situations were hurt. We would say like trafficked now. There's an immense amount of likely like suffering and wrongdoing that woman very likely experienced on her own as well. You know what I mean? That like just the awful realities of this world, and the pressures of things, and the sin of parents, and the sin of men who would buy women, and you know what I mean? It's like it's overly simplistic to just kind of like be like, oh, that awful woman. You know what I mean? And that's not at all to like excuse anybody's sin in any regard. But you know what I mean? Like she was. That was like a real human soul who probably had been greatly sinned against, and who had also sinned herself, you know? And like the Pharisee missed this incredible thing that Jesus like says, like she loves much. That's incredible, you know? That I think is maybe another example of some kind of a mystery of the fact that the God of love can produce something better. Like to love little or to love much, what is better? I think like the love much is better. Maybe you could imagine like what if you imagined heaven? Like I've been reading a little bit of Revelation lately with my family, and what if things went differently? Like, what if Adam and Eve, this is a weird thing to think, but what if Adam and Eve never fell? You know, that'd be like a wonderful thing, right? And heaven, like earth and heaven would be the, I don't know, paradise. I don't know how all that works, which one's which, but there would be this incredibly blessed state of worship and adoration and fellowship with God. And that sounds amazing, right? And all of the suffering that the whole world has ever had to experience would have been like erased. And we could say, like, oh, wouldn't that have been so much better? And like, I'm not ready to say that it wasn't, wouldn't it be better? Like, these are deep things, you know? But I can't help like shake the feeling when like I read the book of Revelation and this other verse that I've mentioned a couple times recently, where in I think it's in Revelation 5 or 5 or 7, maybe 7, right around there, where John looks and he sees this. Sorry, I don't know why I can't talk about anything without crying lately. John looks and sees this great multitude from every tongue and tribe and people and nation, standing there like before the throne with white robes, worshiping the Lamb who was slain. And the angel says, let me give you the question you're supposed to ask, John. Who are these?" And John goes, "Why are you asking me? I don't know. Who are these? Who, what is this great multitude?" And the angel says, "These are those who have come out of great tribulation, or the great tribulation, and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb," something like that. I don't know if I'm quoting it perfectly, but it's hard for me not to think that in some ways, like, that's better. Like, there is like a multitude of people who love much, who have been brought through suffering, who have been brought through forsaking and turning from their own sin through great pain and through great difficulty, through the severe love of God bringing judgment and pain, through an incredible wisdom of God guiding and overcoming. Like, you know that verse that says, "Overcome evil with good." Like, that's an amazing thing. That's what God does. That's what our Father is like. He overcomes evil with good. And there's this like multitude of people who forever and ever know that they came out of great tribulation. And there's a place in Ephesians where it talks about kind of the redeemed being to the praise of the glory of his grace for all ages. And they, because of their redemption, because the lamb who was the lion of Judah became the lamb who was slain, they are trophies of his grace for all eternity. It's like they're like that woman. They love much because of what they went through, what they came through, you know? Or I think about another little fragment of a verse that I've been thinking about, is where it says Jesus endured the cross, disregarding or despising its shame for the joy set before him. It's like impossible for us to like think, like you think about God as perfect blessedness, perfect happiness, right? But again, when I think about God, I know that there's no like increase or no, like, he's too big for my thoughts. But where I'm trying to go is, like, God is like infinitely perfect, no matter what happened or no matter what ha didn't happen. But when I read verses like that, I think about that, like, something was gained. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, something was gained. There was a joy like set before him. There was another fragment is where Jesus says, "There is more joy in heaven over a sinner who repents than 99," or something, that maybe I'm mixing up the two, but over someone who needs no repentance, you know. And there's this picture in the story of the prodigal son of rejoicing when the prodigal returns, you know. Like, something at least from my limited, weak, wormy human perspective, it just feels like, oh my goodness, something incredible was gained. Maybe this is why the lamb is spoken of as the lamb who was slain before the foundation of the world. That Jesus, from all eternity past, it seems like was the Word who was with God from all eternity, was the rejoicing of the Father. But now he is the captain of salvation. Now he's the head of, like, he's the reason why that great multitude exists. And they came through suffering, and he, as their head, came through suffering. He was rejected and hated and beaten and forsaken of the Father, in a sense, and wept sweat drops of blood in agony of soul. Went through suffering and pain. But like there in Hebrews, it says, what was he doing? He was bringing many sons to glory, an eternal weight of glory, like a countless multitude of people who love much because they're forgiven much, who suffered a lot, suffered because of their own foolishness, because of their own sin, because of the sin of other people, because of the pain and difficulty of living in a fallen world where stuff isn't right and things break down and bodies break down and people die. But maybe something incredible was gained. Many, many sons and daughters brought to glory, brought to stand before him and to have something that maybe never could have existed. And that's, I'm saying maybe, I don't know, because again, this is stuff's way above my pay grade. And it's less about trying to establish some sort of airtight doctrine of how this works, but more my kind of desire for myself and for you guys is that we would trust God, that we would hang on. Every one of us faces difficulties, faces pain, faces sorrow, faces suffering. And I think there's reasons why those verses exist in the Bible, why Jesus said those things, why we get a little, like the curtain gets peeled back just a little bit, and we can read about what happens in heaven in the book of Revelation. It's like that we would be encouraged to hang on, to hold on, to keep entrusting ourselves to our Heavenly Father. That's like a phrase that it uses about Jesus in the book of Hebrews, like he kept entrusting himself. That we don't harden our hearts, that we don't give up, that we don't faint in discouragement about anything that's going on, that we set our hope, that Jason used that phrase and verse the other week, hope against hope, that we set our hope in a God who is better than we could possibly imagine. Like a weak and stupid and thin imagination of the goodness of God. It's another thing I've been thinking about and discussing with my family a little bit. Like if you just imagine, like, what's the best version of God, you'd be like, well, he would just give me everything I ever want and give me, like, make everything great and make everything comfortable and feel good, you know? But that's like kind of like what a human being would, you know, like, oh, just give me the best food I want to eat. But like, there's something better that maybe we couldn't imagine. We wouldn't even known to thought to think about, where no, maybe it's better to have suffered. Maybe it's better to have wept. Yeah, there's a phrase in the book of Revelation that says he will wipe away every tear. That's going to be an incredible experience. And maybe it's better to have tears wiped away than to never have had tears, you know? It sounds cheap. Sounds like a Hallmark card. But I really mean it, you know? And I mean it so that, again, not so that we can just be like, oh, like what a neat thing to think about, but so that it's back to my like one drum I'm always beating, but like so that all of us can keep, can kind of hang in there and kind of on the normal days, we can entrust ourselves to the Father. And we can believe in his goodness, and we can have one little part of us that feels like, even if we're going through a hard season or a super hard season or a super good season, no matter what's going on, that we can just kind of entrust ourselves to him and say, like, oh, you're better. You're better than I would have imagined. And those who sow in tears will reap in joy one day. And mourning may last for a night. Or more, you know, sorrow may last for a night, but joy comes in the morning. And Father, I hope in you, I put my trust in you that you're teaching me to love much. And we can have a little bit of a hope that what ultimately will be well even now is well, while we go through while we pass through time, while we live in this like school of a mixture of day and night and comfort and suffering. Hopefully we hang on, we let him, we hopefully we're washing our robes today, tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, and trusting our hearts to him and comforting each other and hanging on and just kind of like letting him wear away itself and sin, and hopefully growing more and more humble and childlike and pure as we grow old, as our bodies like fall apart. And I think like one day we'll really, really be thankful and just, yeah, maybe I'll just stop there, but.